Federal offices in Washington are closed today because of that snowstorm hitting parts of the country. But neither snow nor sleet nor rain can keep us from politics.
So let's bring in our political strategist, Matt Mikowiak. Republican strategist is in Austin, where there is no snow, right, Matt, today?
That's right.
Okay, good. And Jamal Simmons, Democrat and host at Hill TV. He is in Washington. Hi, Jamal.
Hi. I slogged through the snow to get here for you guys.
Good. He's in a standstill.
We're glad. So we're going to get to 20.
All my kudos.
We're going to get to 2020 in a few minutes because there's a lot to talk about right there. But let's talk about first about what the White House is up to right now. California Governor Gavin Newsom is accusing President Trump of political retribution for demanding that state return money for the high-speed train that Newsom has partially put on hold. Newsom said the Trump administration demanded the money after the state sued the administration for declaring a national emergency to fund the border wall. And yesterday, President Trump predicted a legal victory in the courts.
And I think we'll do very well. We have absolute right to do that. I have an absolute right to call national security. We need strong borders.
Matt, first of all, how do you feel as a Republican about Trump doing this, declaring a national emergency in this way? And do you think that it is retribution against California?
No, I don't think it's retribution against California. I think they're trying to get federal taxpayer dollars back for a project that was canceled. Obviously, the dollars were sent to California for that project. And so since the project's not moving forward, presumably they'd have a right to get some of that back. Look, the National Emergency Declaration, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, it's going to move into the courts. It's not going to be resolved anytime soon. It's going to take a year or 2 years. I actually think on the merits that you can make a pretty strong argument that there is a crisis on the border. I know that that's a big debate. But the fact that we've already taken in the first 4 months of this year almost as many unaccompanied minor children and family units as we did all of last year tells you that we do have a crisis down there. It's not simply the number. It's the type of people that are coming in. We do not have the bed space and the facilities to handle and process these individuals. And so, we're not asking for a border across the entire southern border. We're asking for it in the urban areas. That's what the Border Patrol and experts down on the border believe is necessary. Obviously, there are constitutional concerns. I think in this case, the National Emergencies Act allows for the president to take this step. You've had, I think, 58 or 59 national emergencies declared since 1976. Over 30 of them are still in effect, and not once has the Supreme Court overturned it. Now, obviously, the difference here is that he's moving money around, and Congress has, obviously, the power of the purse. And so that's going to be the legal question going forward.
Jamal?
It may or may not be a crisis. It certainly is not an emergency. The president of the United States has been threatening this and talking about this impending doom that's coming across the border, mostly from brown people who are coming across the border. Let's not forget that. There is no emergency. There is no emergency. The president, even when he said he was declaring an emergency, said, I don't have to do this. Now, let's add this other point. Of course, then he also went to play golf at his golf club after he said it was going to be an emergency, which does not smell of an emergency. And lastly, I'll just say the president of the United States is declaring an emergency for something that he tried to get funding for through the appropriate means in Congress and was denied. It is this is the first time by any reckoning I've heard that a president has tried to do such a thing.
That has never happened before. Well, I want to switch to Andrew McCabe, who has been everywhere. This is the former acting FBI director. He's been pushing back with a new book on President Trump's attempts to discredit Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. And here he is on CNN last night with Anderson Cooper.
Do you still believe the president could be a Russian asset?
I think it's possible. I think that's why we started our investigation. And I'm really anxious to see where Director Mueller concludes that.
To which later, White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway responded.
It's hardly worth dignifying with a response. He's a known liar and leaker. And he has said, gee, I guess it's possible, but I can't say that as a fact. Then why the heck are we talking about it?
Well, Jamal, I want to take this up with you, but you have to give me a second because I have to sort of lay some groundwork here because this is so complicated and netty. And conservative Federalist Society contributor Margot Cleveland is saying the same thing. McCabe is a liar and he's getting free network airtime to get out in front of potential criminal charges he might face from President Trump's new Attorney General, William Barr. And briefly to summarize, McCabe is accused of lying, including under oath, and two other federal agents about leaking to the Wall Street Journal parts of the FBI's investigation into the Clinton Foundation during the campaign. McCabe says a justice official tried to discourage him from doing the investigation during the campaign. He was also being questioned about whether he could be impartial and have an investigation because his wife received money from a Clinton friend in a campaign his wife was in. And people speculate maybe McCabe was trying to prove he could be impartial and investigate Clinton and let the Wall Street Journal know that. But putting that aside, he's accused of lying about leaks. So, Jamal, we land on the question. Aren't people correct? Why believe McCabe about Trump?
Why believe Trump about anything? Donald Trump, according
to
the
Washington
Post. You
were a lot quicker than I was in getting to that point. But, yeah.
The Donald Trump, the president of the United States, according to the Washington Post, has been caught lying thousands of times.
Yeah, but you know what your mother used to say? Just because he did it. I mean,
The president admitted that he misled the New York Times when they were talking about a meeting with Russians and he drafted a straight statement with his son. He said, oh, it's just the failing New York Times. Why does that matter? The president is an admitted prevaricator. So the question becomes, you have all these people, not just Andy McCabe. You have former directors of the CIA, former national security officials. You have the former director of the FBI. There are a series of people whose job it is to catch spies and to protect the United States from foreign threats who have all said in public in ways that are remarkable because they don't usually talk in public that the president of the United States is either in league with or being is certainly in league with and is certainly acting in the interest of a foreign power that is an adversary of the United States. And so when an unreasonable thing like this, a fantastic thing like this occurs, reasonable people are thinking about doing things that sound unreasonable because they're faced with a provocation that they have to do something. And they're not doing it outside the law. They're doing this inside the confines of the law. Okay. So I find this to be – we are focused on the wrong thing. It's not Andy McCabe. It is the fact that we have Donald Trump who is provoking these people into doing these things.
Okay. Now we need to focus on 2020 because there's a lot to talk about. And Matt, even though it's the Democrats who are making the news, I'm going to start with you. And the question is Bernie Sanders, he's in the race. $6 million he raised in 24 hours or so, much more than Kamala Harris raised in her first day of fundraising. What do you think of his entry into the race, Matt, or what do you think of the Democratic field at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument that Bernie Sanders has already won the Democratic primary in the sense that all the candidates are running on his ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, he ran last time against the Democratic establishment and I think succeeded in many ways because he wasn't Hillary Clinton. He ran with a better message, ran a better campaign, and were it not for the superdelegates, he may have been the nominee ultimately. He appeared to be, you know, pretty unsure about whether he wanted to run this time. And obviously, you're going to have a very large field. You have 10 or 11 people running now. There are a few more that will get in, sitting senators, likely at least one governor, some private sector folks probably.
Vice President.
Yeah, former Vice President Joe Biden, who at least in the polling is the front runner. Look, to me, the way I'm trying to think about the Democratic primary is this about purity or is it about electability? And I know that there's been some polling recently that's made it clear that maybe it's about electability. It seems like the energy is really more on the purity side, who can really be perfectly aligned with the Democratic left and progressivism on the issues. And I think that obviously pushes the potential Democratic nominee further from the middle, which makes it more and more likely that Trump could potentially get reelected.
Well, Jamal, what do you think about that? And I want to, before I hear your answer, I want to hear what Amy Klobuchar, because this kind of gets to this point, what she said in a CNN town hall on Monday night when she was being asked about free four-year college for all. Here she is.
I am not for free four-year college for all. No. Thank you. And I wish if I was a magic genie and could give that to everyone and we could afford it, I would.
So what do you think, Jamal, about the issue of electability versus purity on the Democratic side?
Electability has never impassioned anyone in an election. I got to say, I've been through a lot of elections, and what wins elections is passion. What wins elections are people who have a fervor for the candidate, and they want to see them get to the Oval Office more than they want anything else that's happening out there. And I think when Democrats try to pick a candidate that they think some mythical swing voter somewhere in America is going to like, we end up with a campaign like a Great Patriot, but a campaign like John Kerry's in 2000. 2004, which Democrats weren't even very excited about, and so neither were other people. Yeah. Matt, I think the people who are out there who are the ones exciting real passion and energy are the ones who stand the best chance of getting elected.
But Matt, we've had already a debate amongst the candidates about who is a socialist and what that means. I mean, Bernie Sanders embracing the fact that he's a Democratic socialist, has been all his life. Kamala Harris having to backtrack and say, I'm not a Democratic socialist. Most Americans don't really, you know, the definition or can distinguish between, you know, a Marxist socialist or a Democratic socialist who is for a democracy. Do you think that Republicans are going to take this and run with it? Or is it to their detriment, ultimately, if people understand, wait a second, maybe fixing health care with Medicare for All is a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word socialism still scares people, and it should. And we're seeing, obviously, a terrible example of its failure in Venezuela, which is obviously on the extreme end of the spectrum. But it is a present day example of that. And so I do think that it's a helpful contrast. The president campaigned. He did that in the State of the Union. He did that in his rally in El Paso. I think he'll do that over the next 2 years.
You have to jump in to say it's not only an extreme example. It's not the same thing, you know, by definition. It's not a democracy. But we take your point.
Well, sure. I mean, yep. But controlling the means of production is the definition of socialism, and Venezuela's done
that. Who's arguing for that? Arguing to control the means of production? We're arguing to make sure people have health care and they get to go to school.
Have to work on that message. We're going to have to end it. Jamal Simmons, Democrat. Matt Mikowiak, the Republican. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.